Baskin.
May it please the Court, Cecily Baskier for amicus curiae in support of the appellant. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal. Despite their different procedural postures, all of the appellees in this case argue that Mr. Higgins did not exhaust his administrative remedies. I'd therefore like to begin with the substantive issue of exhaustion and then turn to the different procedural issues with regard to each of the appellees. In terms of exhaustion, there's a genuine issue of material fact here that the district court did not address in any of its opinions. Was there any further administrative relief available to Mr. Higgins? The district court said that Mr. Higgins didn't exhaust because he didn't show that he'd appealed either to the warden or to the director of the Department of Corrections. And ultimately, this case turns on whether the district court was right. It was not, because Mr. Higgins got administrative relief from the prison, and he was not required to appeal that relief unless there was any administrative relief available to him in addition. Mr. Higgins complained to the prison officials about the use of excessive force, the beating by Captain London on him, and the prison investigated and found that those allegations of excessive force were well-founded. On June 4th, the contract monitor of the District of Columbia sent Mr. Higgins a memo that said, quote, "Internal Affairs, CCA/CTF, investigated your allegation. Warden Figueroa is imposing corrective/adverse action against Captain London." And that's at page 15 in the appendix. In addition, the...
And he complained about the, he complained about the other individual, too, didn't he?
He did. He also complained...
He got no relief with respect to that individual. So why... So he didn't exhaust. He didn't get... Regardless of what he knew, I don't know, you know, the record doesn't show what the discipline was, does it?
No.
So he didn't know, and we don't know.
No. We only know that it was some corrective or adverse action against Captain London.
Yeah. But what was the other fellow's name?
Mays.
That stood in front of the video recorder?
Yes. And Mr. Mays was dismissed without prejudice from this case. In terms of Captain London and CCA, who are the only ones currently involved in this case, Mr. Higgins did exhaust his administrative remedies as reflected in this record because the prison investigated his complaint, and Mr. Higgins says in an affidavit that there was no further remedy available for him.
But isn't the question whether he could get additional relief by appealing further?
Yes.
And he could have, correct? I mean, had he appealed, he might have found out what discipline they took against the guard, right? Or, in your brief, you say that on appeal, he could also have gotten a change in procedures or practices or a correction of records, right? And either one of those would have been helpful to him.
Those are remedies that are listed in the grievance policy.
Right.
However, there's no indication in the record that those were available to Mr. Hagen after he got the investigation and the decision to discipline the officer.
He alleged that this was an unprovoked attack on him by London.
Right.
And he got a decision saying it was not an unprovoked attack, but there was an excessive use of force. Now that's the record. That's his record, right?
Yes.
So he didn't seek a correction of that record.
No.
How do we know that? I thought the record was entirely unclear about whether he in fact received the actual interview and conclusions. There was a memorandum that he did get. That was one page, and it just said that London was going to be disciplined, right?
Yes.
But the other document, which was several pages long, detailing who said what London said and all that kind of stuff, is it clear that he ever received that, that said that this was not an unprovoked attack?
Yes. Mr. Higgins attaches that report as part of his complaint, and so he must have received it at some point in time.
In the brief document to which I believe we're discussing here, you're referring, is from Figueroa to Paul, June 1, 2004. Is that correct?
Yes.
The memorandum, it's about two pages, and it ends with saying, the facts of this inquiry suggest the use of force was made unavoidably necessary by undisputed aggressive and assaultive behaviors initiated solely by Higgins without warning. So that's the record.
Yes, Your Honor. However, it continues to conclude that nothing in the record, and I'm quoting a two sentence later, nothing in the record supports using an unauthorized chokehold to intervene and maintain control of Higgins' combative behaviors.
No, I understand. They found an excessive use of force.
Yes.
Right? But not that it was unprovoked.
Correct.
So if he's maintaining that it was unprovoked and that he's entitled to relief in the administrative process, why didn't he seek correction of the record?
I believe, Your Honor, that construing Mr. Higgins' complaints liberally here and drawing reasonable inferences in his favor, he's concerned about the chokehold and the injuries that he suffered from the attack, and so finding that use of force was excessive by the prison, that did verify his complaint. There's no indication that he remained concerned about who started it and that has any effect on whether there was the use of excessive force once the prison
so
found.
So that document that Judge Ginsburg referred to was attached to his complaint, that report?
Yes.
But he says, does he not, at one point, was it affidavit or something, that the report of the investigation confirmed his allegations?
Yes.
But it didn't.
It confirmed his allegations to the extent that the force was excessive, and that is all that would be necessary for Mr. Higgins to state a claim for excessive force in violation of the, in this case, 14th Amendment as to CCA and 5th Amendment as to the District of Columbia.
Is he claiming, did he claim in his complaint here that this was an unprovoked attack?
He does, Your Honor. However, he also complains that the force that was used was excessive, and that is enough to state a violation, and that was considered well-founded by the prison in this investigative report.
But if his complaint went forward, wouldn't it matter whether any force that was used, if it's unprovoked, would be excessive, would it not?
Believe so, but the
and so at least his complaint would turn on the circumstances of the attack.
Yes,
and yet he didn't he didn't appeal a finding that was at least partially adverse to him. And now he wants to come into federal court and complain that this was a totally unprovoked attack. How can he do that?
Even if the provoke were not, excuse me, even if the attack were not unprovoked, Mr. Higgins, it would still be a question of fact as to whether the force was excessive in a claim here in federal court. Mr. Higgins doesn't need to show that it was unprovoked in order to make out his claim for a constitutional violation. So the fact that he did not challenge that finding that he actually started the incident doesn't affect his ability to recover for a constitutional violation. So he was not, therefore, required to he didn't have to appeal that administratively because the finding that there was excessive force is the only kind of relief that he would need to go further.
Well, it diminishes the scope of his claim, you're saying, but it doesn't obliterate it.
Correct.
It's as if he had two counts and one of them was thrown out. And he takes he's vindicated on the second count, and that's the one he sues on.
Yes, I think, in fact, it could be just perceived as a single count, which is the use of the excessive force, particularly the chokehold. how it started, those facts might come into determining ultimately was it excessive or not, but the prison determined here that it was excessive. And I see that I am out of time.
Further questions? Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court, I'm Lori Vopel, counsel for Corrections Corporation of America and Dale London. With me at counsel table is Mary Wilson, counsel for the District of Columbia. The issue before this court is whether the district court judge abused her discretion in failing to reconsider the grant of summary judgment where no evidence demonstrated that Mr. Higgins properly complied with the grievance procedure as to this particular issue. Moreover, it is whether the court failed to find effective exhaustion because of the findings that were made in the excessive use review. In addition to the fact that
What could he have accomplished? What remedy could he have obtained if he had appealed beyond what he got?
In addition to a correction of the record, which there is a distinction between the findings of the grievance, of the use of force review, that Mr. London used an unauthorized chokehold as opposed to used excessive force in an unprovoked attack. He could also have sought money damages. He could also have sought the ability to have procedures changed, and the only grievance that he filed, in addition to coming 46 days late under CCA's grievance policy, doesn't even indicate what kind of relief he is seeking. In fact, the district court judge ruled properly that CCA fairly treated that as a request to basically be released from detention. He was complaining about the fact that he was being held in detention too long. As far as...
You're saying that there's no finding of excessive force, just an unauthorized technique?
Your Honor, the use of force report indicates that the type of force that was used, the method of force that was used, was the unauthorized chokehold. On Appendix 17, in the last paragraph, the use of force internal affairs officer indicated that the use of deadly force by chokehold or the equivalent was not supported intervention, and his failure to accurately report the involvement or the degree of it indicated that there was a violation of policy. But they specifically held that force was necessary. Mr. Higgins had a history of abuses and assaults on correctional staff, and that occurred here. And that was the finding of the internal affairs investigation. Now, counsel for Mr. Higgins, the amicus, points out that there appeared to be a finding that, or an indication, an inference, I guess, in the June 4th memorandum from the contract monitor Barbara Hart to Mr. Higgins that the investigation was somehow initiated by some kind of a complaint by Mr. Higgins. In fact, whenever an incident report is filed that shows use of force, CCA independently conducts an investigation. That is automatic. And there's no copy of an inquiry on May 14th that is referenced in the memo from Barbara Hart to Mr. Higgins, which indicates it could have been an oral request, possibly and likely just asking about the status of the use of force investigation, which was independently conducted by CCA. But even if you were to construe or assume that the 514 inquiry is some kind of a grievance, even that comes far too late and certainly not within the 7-day period of time that is required under CCA's policy to file a formal grievance. There's no indication that, Mr. Higgins ever filed any type of grievance. And as far as the allegation made by Amicus that Mr. Higgins was somehow impeded or interfered with by CCA in his ability to file a grievance, he doesn't even make that allegation, and with the exception of a one paragraph in his affidavit that was attached to the addendum in support of his response to the motion for summary judgment, where he indicates that after he received a response to the May 17th, the untimely May 17th grievance, which related to the length of his detention, that within 2 weeks of that, he was transferred to another facility and so therefore could not get the forms to appeal it. However, contrary, he also says in that same paragraph that he also didn't feel that it was necessary for him to file an appeal. And if you actually look at that grievance form itself, the bottom signature, which there's no allegation, does not belong to him, that correlates to the check mark where he indicates that he does not want to file an appeal. So any way that you look at it, that's the only time that he ever alleges that there is any obstruction. In the motion for reconsideration, after he's already presented everything that he has to the district court judge, both by way of affidavit and in terms of the documents that he has, and that he was able to obtain copies of the memos and everything, finally, at the last minute, he alleges in the motion for reconsideration that, I think on April 3rd I did submit a grievance and it was taken from me and I don't have a copy and maybe my family has it. And that is just not credible coming that late.
Where is that?
In the motion for reconsideration, Your Honor. And that's just an allegation. There's absolutely no even affidavit supporting that, and that's never even mentioned previously by Mr. Higgins. So there's, aside from the transfer within 2 weeks of his response on the May 17th grievance, there's absolutely no allegation or evidence in the record indicating any kind of obstruction by CCA to Mr. Higgins' ability to file grievances. He just did not file a grievance with respect to the assault at any time, and even though he mentions that in the May 17th grievance, he doesn't indicate what he wants. All he indicates is that he's being held too long in detention.
Did he have discovery on those?
Excuse me, Your Honor?
Did he have discovery?
I believe, Your Honor, that there was limited discovery and that he was able to obtain at least the memorandums and the copies that he did not have previously of the grievance procedures.
He didn't turn up an April 3rd grievance?
No, Your Honor. There is no April 3rd grievance, and to our knowledge, and again, that was never even claimed by Mr. Higgins until the motion for reconsideration. He prepared an affidavit in this case where he sets forth exactly when he believes he appealed, or excuse me, filed a grievance with respect to the April 1st incident, and that is in the May 17th grievance.
In the motion for reconsideration, did he have assistance of Amicus?
Of Amicus? No, Your Honor, he did not. I do know, I'm not sure because that one is actually typewritten. I know that he had the assistance of a jailhouse lawyer both with respect to the opposition and then after the two of them apparently had an altercation while he was in a different facility. He got another jailhouse lawyer who submitted the addendum in support of the response, and which, quite frankly, is very well drafted. That's where he talks about the doctrine of effective exhaustion and where he attaches the affidavit. So I think it's quite clear that he was being assisted by someone who understood the arguments.
His own affidavit?
Yes, his own affidavit was attached.
His own affidavit does not include the assertion that he filed a grievance on the 3rd of April?
That's correct, Your Honor. And that is the affidavit that was attached to the addendum in support of the motion for summary judgment, and that is at appendix. Appendix 136 and 137, and the only one, he says very vaguely, I submitted several informal grievances, and then when he talks about the formal grievance specifically and his inability to appeal it, that's in paragraph 5 of his affidavit. He talks about the fact that he was transferred within a week of receiving the response, and that is, he's speaking about the May 17th grievance.
About being in solitary.
Pardon me?
About being in solitary.
Yes, Your Honor, that's correct. And under Booth and Woodford, which this court recognized, impose
a second. This is that paragraph 5. I was transferred to CTF within a week of receiving the responses. Now, you say that's to the 517 grievance.
Yes, Your Honor.
But he goes on to say, I attempted to get the forms to appeal to a higher level due to my belief that I should have been provided documentation as to the sanctions imposed on the violators. That can't be a reference to his solitary. It's got to be a reference to the allegation of excessive force.
Your Honor, the only grievance that he, the only formal grievance that he filed and that he received a response to was the May 17th one. And that's when he was transferred, was within 2 weeks of receiving a response to the May 17th grievance. And so he...
What was the investigation? The investigation was undertaken in response to what?
In response to the incident report, Your Honor. It's automatically conducted whenever there is a use of force alleged. In addition, here there was a medical
alleged
record.
By whom?
Pardon me?
Alleged by whom? Use of force alleged.
It's included in the incident report,
no.
The fact that force was used.
An investigation was undertaken.
Yes.
There was no report filed by London or Mays.
There was a report, however, filed by the assistant, Your Honor, by Mr. I apologize, and I'll find his name. He was the assistant shift supervisor. He did submit an incident report, and part of...
This is Larry Bynum?
That's correct. And, Your Honor, there were issues that the internal affairs investigator found and concluded that even though he completed that incident report, which does talk about use of force, he determined that Mr. London, you know, authored or basically put together the paragraph for insertion into that, and he did not independently file a separate incident report. But there was an incident report on the record with respect to this, which clearly shows use of force.
The document on JA-32, then? The report of the investigation is June 1st, and there's a document that Higgins submits on May 23rd. I was assaulted by two captains. They name is May and London, with handcuffs on me.
Yes, Your Honor, that is a correctional treatment request form, which is not, first of all, that is not a a formal grievance form.
Well, it may not be a formal grievance. It sounds like a grievance.
It's still not timely, Your Honor. That was filed even later than the May 17th grievance. And he's not seeking or indicating what, if anything, he's seeking there either. He just basically says he was assaulted and that
he suffered injuries.
Yeah. And that they're lying.
How long did he have after April 1st?
April 1st was the date of the incident. Under CCA policy, he had until April the 8th. And there's no evidence or indication in the record that he filed anything prior to May 17th, which is 46 days after the incident. And even then, as I indicated, I think the judge fairly read that as complaining about the length of his detention.
Other questions?
No.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Basker, I'll give you a minute. And can you tell us what there is in the record to indicate, if anything, that he filed a grievance, timely grievance?
Yes, Your Honor. In the record, there are indications of four different occasions that Mr. Higgins complained about the excessive force. First, there's the, in the petition, page 190, I think it is. In the petition for reconsideration.
That's a little late, but.
Yes, I'm just going to go chronologically in terms of the four pieces of evidence. He says that on April 3rd, he filed an informal request. Then there is an indication that on May 14th.
Oh, one second. Is an informal request sufficient under the
Yes, Your Honor, because the grievance policy requires that inmates, before they file a formal grievance, they have to attempt informal resolution. And one way of doing that is to file an informal request slip.
To preserve the claim, it then has to be, if it's not favorably resolved, it has to be a formal request, correct?
If it is not favorably resolved, then yes, they move on to a formal request. However, in this case, Mr. Higgins' informal complaints were favorably resolved.
If the is the 7-day policy applicable to the formal complaint?
To the formal complaint, yes.
So you really can't wait for the outcome of the investigation to preserve your grievance. You have to file a formal complaint within by day 8, right?
Your Honor, in these circumstances.
But otherwise, if the result is adverse, you're done, right? Because you never filed a formal grievance.
Yes, but under these circumstances where the outcome was not adverse and where the prison at no time in the record indicates that it found any procedural deficiencies with the kinds of complaints that Mr. Higgins did file, the prison effectively waived those kinds of arguments about, the complaint came too late, because they addressed it on the merits and they just found that the complaint was well-founded.
How do you know they were addressing the complaint? You're talking about the June 1st report?
I'm talking mainly about the June 4th memorandum, in which says on page 15, it says, "Inmate Hagen, this is in response to your May 14, 2004 inquiry in reference to an allegation of excessive use of force by Captain Dale London. Internal Affairs, CCA-CTF, investigated your allegation. Warden Figaro is imposing corrective slash adverse action against Captain London." There is nothing in this record that indicates that there is any kind of automatic investigation that undertaken by the prison. That is something raised by CCA for the first time here, along with a number of other things that are raised for the first time, such as that he could have gotten money damages or he could have gotten procedural changes. Those were all things that, if that kind of relief was available to Mr. Higgins, in addition to the disciplining of the officer, CCA could have and should have raised below, because they bore the burden of proof.
Well, I thought they did below. It's not in the brief here, but I thought they did in arguing below say that there was relief, further relief that he did not receive.
I'm not aware of anywhere in the record that they argued that. And so they make those arguments for the first time today, but based on the record that was below the district court, particularly the record before the district court, when it was reviewing under 60B, motion for reconsideration, there is not enough evidence to show that summary judgment would have been appropriate. There is a genuine issue of material fact as to whether Mr. Higgins had any further relief he could have gotten. I see that I am out of my extra time. So.
Well, Well, hold on a moment. I'm looking for, see if we can resolve this.
By the way, while he's thinking, are we reviewing that for abuse of discretion?
Yes, Your Honor.
We're not looking to see whether, I guess the question is, did the district court abuse its discretion in concluding that there was no genuine issue of material fact, right?
That's the issue as to the CCA, to CCA and as to London. It's not the question as to the District of Columbia.
Right, I understand that, right, because that's de novo.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Here's what they do say. I don't find right now, and I'm not sure I will find they're making this argument below, but they did say this. The formal grievance process contains four steps. Initially, the inmates must initially send grievances on the inmate resident grievance form to the grievance officer. Now, that's what's apparently lacking here, right?
What
you say he didn't need to because his informal grievance was resolved favorably.
Yes, Your Honor, and he submitted there are a number of things there, April 3rd, May 14th, May 23rd, and also arguably May 17th, that formal grievance form, which does reference the assault. The district court said that it was reasonable for CCA to understand it as not referring to the assault, but viewing things in the light most favorable to Mr. Higgins on summary judgment, that document as well raises these issues.
Thank you, Ms.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay, thank you all. Case is submitted.